Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year. Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
Listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast radio show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
This week, Jeff and Scott welcome pedalboard master David Phillips and veteran session guitarist Tim Pierce. Now, David started LA Sound Design in 2006 with partner Martin Golub, inspired by Tim Pierce and that level of LA session guitarist. So today's show should be really interesting. A tone-oriented pedalboard company, LA Sound Design serves the likes of Prince, Alice Cooper, and about everybody who cares about guitar tone, including Sweetwater friend Paul Jackson Jr.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast radio show. We have a great show for you tonight. Scott is on vacation visiting his family back east, and he's probably freezing right now. He's out in Illinois. But needless to say, we're here. While the Scott's away, the Flow is at play. My guest host tonight is another great guitarist and a good friend, Jim Stubblefield. Jim, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here hitting the co-seat.
Thanks for having me.
And, and also, too, a regular on our show, Ron Moreno. Ron, it's great to have you here, too. What are you guys, real quick before we start, what's been going on with you guys? Let us know what's happening with you. So you start out, Jim.
Yeah, I'm just finishing up the year with some gigs. Going to be doing a show with Grammy-nominated guitarist Luis Villegas. We've got a show coming up at Bogies in Westlake Village. It's pretty much it's sold out, except there are some standing room only tickets available. It's December 21st.
And where can they get the tickets?
LuisVillegas.com, LuisVillegas.com. Mm-hmm. And so there are some limited standing room only tickets, and it's going to be great acoustic flamenco fusion, nuevo flamenco fusion. I don't know how to describe it.
And you also have a new guitar coming. Do we have an estimate when that's going to be here? And tell us real quickly about
I have a guitar being built by a luthier in Florida named Jorge de Sofia, and he's building me a Brazilian rosewood Florentine cutaway. It's very similar to Aldi Miola's Florentine Conde Hermanos, except it's not costing me $15,000. But it's I'm not going to say how much it is costing me, but it's less. And it's got a fantastic pickup system being put in by Juan Carlos VIP. It's the Vicente Amigo system. It's really the best system around for the nylon string guitar.
Yeah, no, when you get it in, we're going to definitely have you come in and A-B it.
You run that through a Pendulum SP1 preamp, and it sounds like an acoustic guitar with a mic in front of it. You cannot tell it's going direct.
Check out Jim Stubblefield's Facebook page, and you'll see pictures of it being built. He's been keeping us, up to date on what's happening. But it's interesting how they build those guitars and integrating the pickup.
Yeah,
system.
He's building it the old Spanish way. He's doing all the stuff very traditional.
And Ron, what are you up to?
Officially, this last week, I am the Nobles distributor for the U.S. So the German company is back into the U.S., and those pedals will be available here. We're going to open up a limited dealer base, but it'll be 20, 25 dealers. Mm-hmm. But we're bringing the pedals back. They've been here on and off, but it's been tough to get them. So we'll have them back and available.
Okay, yeah, we'll definitely have to do a show on those pedals too. So, and then also too, I want to thank, since Scott usually does the opening announcements, Kenny Bergel and Phil Selman from Sweetwater Sound, our sponsors, gave me some voiceover work, so they did the little announcement of you guys at the beginning, and I just want to thank them because they came through and got me that stuff really quick. And Kenny, Phil, I thank you for that, and we always thanks Sweetwater. And a lot of the gear that we're talking about tonight, also to check out, Sweetwater sells pretty much everything in the universe, so you can find it, and they have good prices, and they're very good at helping you if you have questions and stuff. Their customer service can't be beat, so check out sweetwater.com. Okay, we're going to get let's actually go to commercial right now, and when we come back, we will be talking with Tim Pierce and David Phillips.
Hi, Kenny Bergel here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. This week, Jeff and Scott welcome pedalboard master David Phillips and veteran session guitarist Tim Pierce. Now, David started LA Sound Design in 2006 with partner Martin Golub, inspired by Tim Pierce and that level of LA session guitarist. So today's show should be really interesting. A tone-oriented pedalboard company, LA Sound Design serves the likes of Prince, Alice Cooper, and about everybody who cares about guitar tone, including Sweetwater friend Paul Jackson Jr. Have fun with this one, and don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Bergel and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
Hey, this is Brent Mason with Jeff and Scott, Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, and enjoyed being on the show, and hopefully we'll get together again, and I'm going to go to bed. Thanks, guys.
I had to play that little clip because Brent's one of the biggest session guys over in Nashville, and tonight we have one of the biggest session guys here in L.A. First, I want to introduce Tim Pierce. Thank you so much for being on the show. Tim's played on a lot of different groups and a lot of different sessions, and we'll get into it. There's a bunch of them. I want to make sure I get it right. Thanks. So we'll get I don't want to misquote, but though he did play on Toy Matinee, which is one of
he will be asked about that.
Yeah, we'll be asked about
ask,
that.
Ask away.
And then also to David Phillips, he's a guitar player too. So everybody here is a guitar player. That's what I love. Even Ronan in the console room over there, he's a guitar player, which makes the show more authentic. Uh-huh. But anyway, David builds pedal boards and designs custom systems for a lot of different people. Tom Petty, a bunch of different people, and we'll get into that in a minute. But anyway, I just want to welcome both of you guys to the show.
Thank you.
It's really great to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Nice to be here.
Now, I'm going to start out with David first, real quick. I want to ask you the changes now that you're seeing from when you first start. Give us a little bit of your background of how you got into the pedalboard business. But also, too, what I wanted to ask you is when you first started, the type of stuff. I know that in the late 70s and 80s, people were making these monster rack rigs and all sorts mm-hmm. of stuff. And has it changed for you? Like, we had Bob Bradshaw on before, and he had mentioned that the trend was to smaller little pedal boards. So I wanted to notice if that is what you're seeing now, or what is the trend in terms of custom systems?
Well, it's definitely a trend towards, smaller travel boards. And for I do a little bit of racks, but mainly for people's home studios, where they're starting to put the stuff in their home studio that they used to have out on, mm-hmm. For gigs. But, weight restrictions, all that stuff, and, a lot of artists don't want big, systems on the stage with them. They're either under the stage or, that sort of thing going on. So it's mainly 98% pedal boards these days.
Okay. Yeah, we had a while ago, we had Alex Grossi on from Quiet Riot, and he basically tours with two guitars and a little hand-carried pedal board, and then they rent the amps for him and all that stuff. But he basically, that's all he carries with him on the road. It's amazing.
And I have seen a trend towards, people have told me, people bringing fractal units out and plugging direct to the board, and that's everything. for right. them, not even anything, and sequences or running their patch changes. And for a lot of the modern bands, I haven't seen it yet personally. I still do boards, but there are bands out that are touring with just like one rack piece, and mm-hmm. that's everything, their amps, their effects, and everything.
Yeah. No, I had heard that Alex Lifeson of Rush,
yeah.
basically, he has amps. And he uses a lot of virtual effects on computer, but basically no speaker cabinets on the stage. Everything goes into the board. It's tapped out and,
yep.
and goes into there. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask Tim here. Pedal boards, obviously. You use them a lot. Rack effects, you've used all of that stuff. What's the difference in terms of a setup for you for studio work? As opposed to, is it a different type of setup for you for live?
Well, if you wouldn't mind, let me talk about the rack thing for a second, because that's very interesting to me. I had really, really great big racks, and there was a period where guitar players were obsessed with having a big, wide stereo image. All the greatest records, I believe, had one guitar part on the right and one guitar part on the left, all the great rock records, typically. And they were mono guitars, but somewhere in the 80s, guitar players got enamored with this big wide stereo effect thing. And part of that was because in tracking sessions, the guitar sounded huge and everybody was really confident when you would hear the guitar with a big stereo delay and stuff like that. That lasted for a while, and I think then there was a return to the amp. All those sweet sounds that happened, all the distortion that happens in the middle was achievable with amp heads, but it wasn't really achievable with a rack. You could get great saturated sounds and great clean sounds and great stereo effects, but you couldn't get the in-between sounds. And so that started to come back. And the amazing thing that happened is that a couple of guys that I know, Mike Landau and Michael Thompson, they both started putting mic pres in their rigs. And that's something we didn't talk about earlier. And that was the greatest thing, because then you could take any amp, be it like a Fender Champ or a Bogner or anything, pump it through your rack, and because a microphone was plugged into your mic pre, the stereo effects got used the way they were meant to be used. So that actually was what should have happened originally, but it finally mm-hmm. happened near the end of the rack area. Pedal boards, they're more immediate, they're more convenient. There was also a time when producers started to get angry if a guitar player brought in too much gear. I remember that happening to me.
Wow. Okay.
Where I would show up, my cartridge would start to come in, and they would get visibly irritated. It was a delicate thing. Maybe it was identified with a prior era of music. I don't know. But pedal boards, and I mean, I'm thankful for it because I carry gear in my car now. I do a lot of work at home, but I carry gear in my car. I'm thankful for the small rigs.
Yeah, but now, what was the? Was there any different in your rig when you played live or when you played in the studio? Or did I mean?
I have to admit that I kind of gave up live playing because I just wanted to be in the laboratory, as it were. But I did play. I did a gig with Snuffy's band recently, and I chose the simplest. I have a pedal board that fits in a suitcase, and I always wondered why these great guitar players like Jeff Beck and people would have tiny pedal boards. I wondered kind of what's wrong with these huge megastars and they have these like five pedals on a board. You get on stage and you really want only two or three sounds, I feel. I mean, I don't want to be jack of all trades, so that's kind of what I do. I have a small pedal board that fits in a suitcase. I use that, and I usually pick three sounds to use for the whole night.
Okay.
So it's a big difference.
Yeah.
That's
now,
great.
Now, let me ask David about this too, because you are getting calls constantly to custom setups.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron, we had talked about this before when you were on the early, on another show, previous show. Some guys, like for the live setups, especially guys like, for example, like Lifesense, where they're using things that are controlled by MIDI. So they'll use a sequence of effects that gets a certain studio sound that they got for a record.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like he does, he'll use virtual stuff. So he'll hit like a MIDI trigger and or somebody off stage will hit it and it'll set up this sound with maybe five or six effects. And the same thing with pedal boards. We were noticing that people were building just series of loops with dedicated pedals to get this sound. So loop one would be for this song, loop two would be three or four pedals for this song. Are you seeing that as a trend, or do you still have like a pedal board where I would think more of a studio type of thing where you can mix and match, change the sequence of what comes first?
Well, lately I've been seeing a lot of MIDI controlled loop strips, like made by Musicom, or RJM has a new unit coming out where you can have 10 loops, 10 pedals on the floor. Each of them have a loop, with relays that take them in and out. So, and the last two being stereo, some of them, like the RJM, has a parallel mixer built in it. It also changes between, it'll change your amp channels for you. It'll mm-hmm. change between two different amps in stereo or separate. And all this with one button. Because there's, and you can have your set list and then hook it up to your computer and modify your set list. So there's a lot of that going on for the live player. Then you have the guys that do, you know, studio work like Tim that just have the boards in the studio. They don't need to have all the MIDI stuff. They just need a switch for on-off. So then we have your passive loop strips that Road Rage and other companies make like that. Mm-hmm. And then some guys I have that, you know, they really know what their sound is. They might split like a loop strip up into like three different chains of pedals that feed different amps or one amp. So you can have them set up ahead of time. Like I have a delay and a reverb for my clean. And I have a delay and a distortion and another reverb from my lead. And I can choose between them by just hitting one button back and forth to one clean amp.
Yeah.
So that's also a possibility. So there's so many different ways to do it. But I see a lot of MIDI controllers for pedal boards going right now. Yeah, that seems to be the trend.
I don't know. I'd have to have this verified. But somebody had told me, like, in Larry Carlton, one of his live setups he had, he actually had one amp set up where he was playing directly in it, and then he had two other amps that basically reverbed, just play it, like it gave like an ambience to it.
That would sound amazing.
That would sound good.
That I mean,
would
be it's amazing. Like Trario, but I mean,
it was
like, yeah, but I mean, that's hard. I know in a like a club or a combo situation, it's cool if you can get it to work. But it's
like Michael Landau likes to run like a dry amp with his pedals in front of it, and then use like a Strymon Timeline into a second amp, and then blend in the wet to that second amp, so mm-hmm. he can have this balance of spread, and decide how much wet he hears via expression pedals and that sort of thing.
Okay,
so that gives him the flexibility to add in the ambience or take it away and be dry and just have control over his spectrum or whatever he's doing.
Now you've built his rack.
Or I've done some pedal board stuff for him and custom boxes for, but we have done a lot of wet dry systems and wet dry wet systems for like a lot of people, you know. And then also what Tim mentioned, I've done racks to where it's a mic pre, and the amps get mic'd up and then fed through all the outboard gear.
Yeah.
To the console, and then either the engineer would get a dry feed and a wet feed, and then they could decide on how much they want in the mix.
Have you ever done a system where you had one amp? I think Steve Stevens did this, where he actually used a Marshall head, like a preamp, and he tapped out from the speaker out to distort it, so he got like the power tube distortion or the brown sound, and then he ran that into a series of amps.
We've done many heads where you feed a Palmer unit and it's a load, and then it will take it and it will go into the as a glorified preamp. So you could run a dry cabinet in the center, or you could just not run, just run the head into the rack and then feed a power amp or direct to the board, you know, without having...
I have a question, actually. Tim, could you talk about how you guys, like when you got together with your pedal board and some of the needs that you had for your studio situation?
It's really pretty simple. Dave actually never holds a client hostage. he does incredible work, but I love the fact that he will turn stuff around for you and get it done right and get it done quickly. My needs are very simple. I don't with a good loop strip in front of me, just where I can turn stuff on and off, and I'm protected by a loop strip because if something fails, it doesn't kill my whole system. If something is degrading the tone, I can tell right away because I'm constantly just, you know, turning this thing on and off. So it's actually very simple for me. I'm very interested in a MIDI switcher for a pedal board. However, you quickly make a pedal board that's too big. And when you build a pedal board that's too big, it's you have to tear it apart and start over. I've done that before. So it's always a very difficult dance between having everything you want on it and making it too big.
And you're notorious for getting the pedal board home and then going, oh, this new shiny thing might be nice popped in there,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, I have a term with Dave. I call it stuff a placeholder. I say, Dave, this is just a placeholder. Yeah. Tons of placeholders so that I can change them out immediately.
So you leave enough room so Tim can pop in the new goodie.
Yeah. And I've done a system for him where he had actually open loops that had another pedal board running in the loop of the main pedal board.
So I used that today, actually. I had... Yeah, every pedal board for me is basically like another big pedal. So today I had a pedal board, and then I had another pedal board that was plugged into an open loop.
Oh, my gosh.
It works great. It works great.
So you just offer those as a – that's very cool. So you can just kind of jerry-rig or –
Satellite
know,
boards, yeah. It's like I don't want to take everything. I just want to take my main board.
I just need a port to stick something in and get it going. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you had, like, you know, your basic, like you were talking about, some of the big guys use a very simple, you know, setup. And then you want to, you know, you're in a studio and it's like, you know, let's try this distortion unit. Or let's try this thing. You just can patch it in. And
yeah, on my made board that Dave built for me, I have three open loops and I'm constantly plugging stuff into them.
Yeah. So you
customizing for every session.
Okay, let me ask you this then. What do you consider the basics of the board? Like the basics.
I have to have a volume pedal because I use it as a noise gate and I also use it for volume swells. But the volume pedal is constantly being used to hide noise. There's always noise. I'm always hiding it. The Nobles ODR1. I have a couple of vintage ones that came from Tom Bukovac originally and then John Shanks. John actually gave me one of his, and that's a necessity because you can imitate sweet amp sounds, really, really sweet amp sounds. A spring reverb, you know, like a Strymon, it doesn't even have to be expensive. These days, reverb is one of the few legal effects. You want to use a Univibe, that's not legal. You can't use it. Mm-hmm. You want to use an Octavia, can't use it. It's not legal in my game.
How about delay? Yeah. Can you use it yet?
Delay's constant, yeah. Okay. You can use it, yeah. I try and hide my delays. Now, any delay is good. The thing I use that's unusual, I use Line 6 Echo Park delay, which is probably a very undesirable thing to a lot of players, but I use them every day because they're very dark and sweet. They were designed by George Tripps, way huge, and they sound dark and musical. And
The original Echoplex was
it.
Dark.
I love the Line 6 Echo Park. So the Nobles, the Echo Park, a good reverb, a good tremolo. Tremolo's legal, too. What else? Memory Man, I've gotten off of. It sounds a little old-fashioned to me, but that may change.
Red Snapper, you like a lot?
No, I haven't used that in a while.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Still a great pedal. Still
now, with your spring reverb, do you use an actual spring reverb or digital?
No, it's too inconvenient to.
So the digital ones are adequate
for Strymon stuff is amazing.
The only thing, the Boss Fender reverb, like I tell people, the only thing you can't do is kick it and get that. George Harrison type of thing on it.
It's the Flint that I use. That's what it is.
The Flint. So that's the basic thing. You don't carry a wah, is that?
There is a wah on the board, but that's barely legal now. You can use it as a filter more or for a Brian May kind of effect. The minute you start going whacka-whacka, it's rare that anybody will let me do that these days.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's true, because a lot of stuff gets over. I mean, the phase shifter, when it came out, everybody used it, and it just became overkill after a while.
Now, David, on your box, I keep calling it
the interface.
The interface. Yeah. There's a switch that you can switch in and out for. Jeff, were you mentioning the? I think it was the buffer.
Well, the interface, the PI one.
Yeah, can you explain
about
that to?
It's basically an in and out for your board in one place, one central location. And in my case, you know, we designed it so it has a really natural, organic buffer that does not affect the mid range, which is the most important aspect of the guitar. Most buffers, you know, they add highs and lows, and as soon as you add low end, your mid range changes. So in this case, it has, you know, the mids are constant. They don't change. And then we put a vintage modern switch on it. So if you don't want that glassiness that a buffer adds, you can take that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you send through this buffer through all your pedals, and then you would return from your last pedal in stereo if you want, because we have an ISO transformer in there made by Jensen, so you don't get any hum going to 2 amps. Or you can split your mono signal to 2 amps without any hum. So, like, dual mono.
Yeah, because before we started, Ron was talking about that.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the coolest thing.
So, I mean, there's a lot of buffer companies out there that make buffer, but this is an actual interface that is all your ins and outs for your board. It has ins and outs with an ISO, so it's basically your lifeline to your board.
That's fantastic.
And so and we thought it was a good product because there wasn't anything out like that, so we came up with a Jensen and I.
Mm-hmm. No, that's cool. I got a question for Tim. When you're doing sessions and you're playing a rock, dirty sound, do you use, what would you, more or less use amp cranked up, or do you use distortion pedals?
I generally favor the amp, but this is something I'm very, very interested in talking about. the pedals that I like in front of an amp are simply the pedals that blow up the front end and sound natural. So not distortion pedals. I use a microamp most of the time mm-hmm. for the front end. Or a super hard-on or clean boost. The pedals that I gravitate to are natural-sounding pedals that just explode the input of the amp, if you understand what I'm trying to
right.
say.
Right. So you if you're going to do any distortion, yeah. it's at the amp stage.
Yeah. I have a signature pedal that sounds really good that kind of does that, but it also has distortion in it because a lot of players want... I mean, I would say the Nobles goes past that, and it sounds great, but I'm generally seeking that sweet spot where the amp is at its best point. It might be between 4 and 6, where it's breaking up a little bit, and then you explode it with... I use actually Bob Bradshaw's MXR Custom Audio microamp.
Mm-hmm. The boost slide boost. Driver?
Yeah. I use that like 90% of the time for my distortion. Because for me, I try and stay modern, and the modern distorted sound is not that distorted. It's not that saturated. It sounds more like a natural, you know, amp.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also back in the days with the racks, those were the hardest sounds to get, were those in-between sounds.
Exactly.
You could get the glass clean, you could get the super...
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the whole holy grail.
Yeah, that's where I live now. I live in that place where it's one amp, it's half distorted, you just add a little distortion with a pedal.
Yeah, so yeah. And now, Dave, too, that in the systems that you're designing now... Are they using more amp distortion, or are they using more effects? I mean, like, I know they can, like for example, Dweezil, he'll use a fractal system. He does have distortion pedals in front of it. He does get distortion out of the, you know, modeling out of the fractal. Are you seeing the guys basically in the live rigs that you're building? Are they, you know, they have their effects, but they're ending up cranking the amp to get the distortion?
Most of them are doing clean amps with their pedals getting all their gains, because it's almost a bigger sound at times, I think, than using preamp distortion, because mm-hmm. it can get kind of compressed and small. So a lot of the boards I set up are stereo, so they can go to two Voxes or two, you know, clean Fenders, and then all the sounds are happening at the board, so they can put on an overdrive for their kind of in between, or put on a distortion, and it's all, you know, just a clean platform. So when they go on the road and they get backline, they can say, "Give me two JCM 900s." If they don't like that sound out of that amp, they have the sound in their board.
They have it in the board,
and they're using that to get the sound. So no matter where they go backline, they can get their tone.
So when they're using a setup where they're getting like that, just real creamy sustain forever, that's pedals.
It's pedals. And I do some rigs to where, you know, some pedals go in front of the amp, and then we run some of the processing and delays and reverbs in the loop of the amp they're using. Right. Then you're using the amp for distortion. Because you really can't run reverb and delay in front of a distorted amp. It's going to sound
wrong. Right.
So we have that as well.
Well, one of the things that you... In the session work that I did, one of the things that I noticed using a pedal as opposed to an amp, a lot of times in the studio, I would turn the amp up and just crank it up. The thing was with the pedal is I didn't get the punch. One thing about turning up, and especially power tubes, I like the power tube distortion as opposed to a buzzy preamp distortion. But that power tube, when you hit the guitar, you feel the air move. And that was one of the things that the pedals didn't do for me. How do you get that punch out of it? And Tim, both of you guys pitch in here.
Well, I can answer your question finally about what do I do live. I do what Dave's talking about. Because I remember I asked for a couple of AC30s or a couple of Fender Twins or whatever they got. And I've designed, you know, I have 3 distortion pedals on my pedal board. I have saturated distortion pedals on my pedal board. And I set them. And that's how I do it live, exactly the way he's talking about.
And you get that punch, yeah. like that chunk out of it?
Live is different. Live is an illusion. Recording is I know exactly what you're talking about. I think it's easier today because you're usually playing over a track that's full enough to where you don't have to have that crunk. Let's call it a crunk.
Okay.
You know, whatever. To talk about Tom Bukovac again, I did a Rob Thomas record with him side by side, and he brought a Fender Princeton and got all the tones out of his pedals. Now, he's a very gifted musician, so he can get a tone out of anything, but he actually bypassed that thing you're talking about and chose just to use pedals and a small amp, and he got all the tones. It's a little, you have kind of have to trick your mind a little bit, but part of that is because there's a bass player and a drummer pounding away. And the music, the style of music is more retro than it used to be. What you're talking about, that rock thing, you can kind of do without it a lot of the time these days. That's all.
I have a question about to print or not to print effects. You know, I know some guys will do a bone dry thing and then it's in a loop. And if they, oh, that delays a little out of time. Oh, we can fix it later. I mean, how often do you find yourself really wanting to print?
I use effects as a seasoning because the fashion these days is pretty much bone dry sounds. I use delays to make the sound float, but I always hide the trails. So when I'm using a delay, it's just to make it float a little bit.
Nice.
But I try and make sure the listener never hears the trail and never actually knows there's a delay on.
Yeah.
So I prefer to use delays in Pro Tools now because I don't want people to take the work home and say, oh, this is too wet. That being said, I'm guilty. Like any guitar player, I'm addicted to delays.
So you'll actually give them a track and then a delay track separate, right?
No, I won't do that. If I'm worried about what they're going to take it, you know, if they're finicky and I know they're going to examine everything, I'll say, why don't you just put up a delay, Memory Man, and you know, Sound Toys. I'll just have them do a plug-in. Very quick and easy.
No, that's interesting.
But no, I print delays all the time.
Excellent.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no. Some guys would integrate some of, like, let's ask about that, about flanging or phasing. You'll leave it bone dry, let them do that post?
That doesn't exist for me. I can't use those effects. People don't want them.
Illegal.
Really?
Yeah, illegal.
Not legal. For me.
It's
illegal.
What about, let's just go down the line a little bit here. What about Leslie's? Is that
legal? That's legal. Everybody loves the Leslie simulators. Now, love.
You use a simulator or use a real Leslie?
Oh, no. I mean, I love a real Leslie, but Dave turned me on to the
Neo Ventilator.
And then the other.
What's Neo Ventilator?
And then the other ones are great, too. The Strymon is great, too.
Yeah, the Neo.
I think Leslie's come back in a big way because it's like the anti-chorus because it's vintage.
Yeah, it's
yeah. Well, the thing is, I mean, Scott and I have gone through this a lot about different simulators, and a lot of them end up sounding to me kind of univibe-y. The thing that you can't get out of them that the Leslie gets is that really distorted Joe Walsh just.
That's
balls on the wall.
The Neo Ventilator gets that.
It gets that.
It's the closest. It's got that honky Leslie sound, and you have a preamp distortion on it, and it's the closest I've heard. I can't, you know, it sounds like it to me.
Yeah, I heard, I listened to a YouTube thing of it, and I was impressed because Scott had sent me that, and he said, check this out. What do you think of this? And I'm like, that's pretty close. I mean, I have the Roland one, and it's nice. It gets a nice low wash, but it just doesn't get that sound. And I love that sound, even with keyboards, with, you know, the old Keith Emerson cranking up that, you know, just cranking up that Leslie.
Hearing it spin,
you hear it spin.
Speaking of sounds, can I ask Tim about one of the I told you before the show I wanted to ask you about the whole Toy Matinee thing. It's a record I think near and dear to many musicians' hearts. Can you talk a little about your involvement with Kevin Gilbert, the whole thing, and how you got your sounds, what you were actually using at that time period?
I had been using racks, and I had a big, giant rack, and I was trying to get the sounds Dan Huff and Mike Lando and all those guys were getting, and I was not quite getting those sounds, and I was crying a lot about it. But Patrick Leonard had this huge success with Madonna and a bunch of other records he had produced, so he wanted to do his own project. He put together a band. He had an engineer named Ian Eales. Ian recommended me, and because I walked in and used amps, because my rack never sounded as good as I wanted it to, so I was still showing up with amp heads. And because I came in and I was not like the other guitar players he knew, I was kind of this oddity, and I played through amps, that touched him in a way because he was looking at, you know, his heroes like Pink Floyd and all these prog rock bands that he loved. And so he chose me to be the guitar player just because I was kind of out of the box in that way. And it was simply because my rack never sounded. I bought all the stuff and I tried, and my rack never sounded quite as good as the other guys.
And this was early 90s, right?
Yeah, it was. So he put together a band. He paid us all a weekly salary. It was like 12 weeks. We rehearsed. We learned the songs. We cut the songs live. That record is essentially a live record. When you hear all the parts on that record, they were recorded live. I knew it was one of the best things I'd ever done. Kevin Gilbert was a genius. He could play any instrument except electric guitar. He couldn't play that well, so I did get to have a job and a role in the band. But the interesting thing about Toy Matinee is that the tempers flared, and before the record was done, the band had basically broken up. And it was fun to watch.
Genius
that
is at work.
It was funny. So they tried to hold it together, and they tried to resurrect it and tried to keep it going. Luckily for all of us, the record still exists, you know, in a lot of people's hearts as one of the, you know, kind of a great odd record.
Was there a go-to guitar or two that you were using for the electric stuff on that record? Or were you grabbing all type, like Jenny Ledge, like Turn Me On Salvador?
Yeah.
Can you touch on those a little bit?
The thing about being a player, a studio musician, I was surrounded by pretty heavy people, and they all had their own guitar opinions. Bill Bottrell is a great guitar player. He produced the record. So there were guitars being passed around that I didn't even own. I had a Tom Anderson that I used. I think I may have used my Tom Anderson Stratocaster on Last Plane Out. And that was a very, you know, that was the L.A. guitar with the Floyd Rose. So they were open to that, but then at the same time, they would hand me vintage guitars. I used a high-watt head for a lot of that stuff.
You got so many different tones. You got like tons of different clean tones on that record.
Yeah, that was Bill Bottrell. I mean, I was with people. You know, the thing about working with great people is they don't let you fail. Not only do they not let you fail, they make you 10 times better than you are. And that was one of those situations.
Yeah, just iconic record. Thank you for playing on that.
So the... well, okay, let me ask you this then. Did Toy Matinee ever play live?
They did, but that was after the band broke up. That was Kevin Gilbert saying, "I'm going to do this anyway, even though I'm the only one." So he put together a band of other musicians and went and supported the record because he was interested. He said, "I have to see this through." You know, I understood his point. But
Sheryl
Crow was in that band, yeah.
And who's the left-handed guitar?
Mark Bonilla.
Mark Bonilla, yeah.
I did. Yeah. I sat in with him at the Roxy.
Yeah, he's a killer player too. He's another one. Yeah. David, let me ask you, what was the most unusual setup, either rack or pedal board, that you've done? What was the most bizarre?
Well, the biggest, I would say, was my friend Tim Mahoney from 311. And he did, I mean, this is probably one of the biggest boards we did. It was like two independent loop strips that had an AB box between them that fed two different amps, and then another board that ran in the loop of that amp. And then rack that ran in the loop of those two amps. So it was just like, and he always keeps upgrading. So I got it in the shop right now. He's adding a couple more pedals, but it's constantly. That was a pretty big one. And then I did a pretty intense rig for Dan Warner, a producer out of Miami, that he wanted to come in and out of his rig through Pro Tools. And we had to build a custom interface that was like post and pre-Pro Tools. Mm-hmm. So that, and all these ins and outs, and all this stuff was in the back of the rack, and then he wanted to have it be a certain height so that it would be in the studio with his amps. And so that was pretty involved as well. I mean, as far as the interfaces go and ISOs and all that and trying to get it to be dead quiet. And so
now, do you end up, when you're building some of the stuff, and especially with some of the older pedals, if somebody has a vintage pedal, do you have to go into the pedal and clean them up?
Sometimes. I mean, I tend to not want to touch vintage pedals myself. Like if I was to build a board with vintage pedals, I would say, oh, you know, get a loop strip, you know, and then we can use that to turn the pedals on and off. But sometimes, like with, like, you know, small stones or stuff like that, you almost have to go in, you know, if you don't want a volume drop, you have to put a buffer in to fix it. Or if there's some things that bleed clock, you got to true bypass it, so we got to change the switch out. Or some guys will want to put a power jack on a vintage pedal.
Now is the loop strip the thing that also allows if a pedal dies, the whole pedal board doesn't go down, you can finish the gig?
You're basically going through a box with, say, 10 switches on it, and that's acting as your on-off for the pedal instead of stepping on the pedal. And so if anything happens to the pedal, you just turn off the switch, and you're not going through that pedal anymore.
Could you touch on and maybe how when Tim and even Ron, when you bring pedals, you said some people just bring a bucket of pedals to you and say, make it work together, versus somebody who says, build me a killer system and just money's not an object. Buy the coolest distortion, the coolest. Can you talk about a little bit?
Well, like, I mean, my approach is like, the client will come to me and I will first ask them, like, what kind of sounds they're going for. Who are their influences? Because that gives me a sense of where to go. You know, if they say, well, I'm really into David Gilmour, or I like, you know, Hendrix and stuff.
Oh, that's fantastic, yeah.
Well, then I would say to them, well, you don't really want a Timeline or a Mobius on your board if you're into Hendrix, because that's more modern. And so I'll kind of dictate I'll ask them if they, you know, the kind of sounds they want to go, and I'll look with what they have.
And you'll acquire those pedals for them even? You'll go that far? Or you'll just say, buy this and then bring
sometimes,
it to me?
Sometimes they'll say, you know, buy me all the stuff. Other times I'll have guys just send me a box. I've got clients from Europe that send me a box, you know, from France, and I'll do the board, and then I'll ship it back to them. And everything we do is custom. Like, they'll send us all the pedals, and I will make the board to fit what they have instead of trying to get a board and put pedals on it to make it fit. The interface, the case, everything is custom made. Oh, I want an A/B switch on my interface. I want a loop. I want a tuner mute. I want a channel switch. We can build that all into a small box in the corner, so it's acting as a buffer. Your outputs, your channel switch, whatever you want, is for what the client wants.
So, Ron, is that what you did as well for your bass rig?
There's a loop switch on there that, you know, like I asked Dave for some advice, you know, what the POG would do to my sound. He says, you got to have that in the loop switch. So it's there. And that's a really simple setup that I have. It's simply the loop switch with a couple of the effects on each one of the switches. And then there might be one effect that has one. Honestly, I don't use much of them that often. It's just pending on the project and the music we're playing and if it fits what, you know, needs to be done at that time. So again, sometimes like Tim, it's kind of temporary in some cases because new things will be put on depending on what you're doing music wise.
Yeah, I think I think what you guys are all saying too, the bottom line is it's got to be tweakable so you can change as things change.
Or like Tim said, have those empty ports so you can put into the new thing.
Well, it's a placeholder. It's like it might be a pedal I don't even use, but it's set up with, it's all plugged in and I can just pop it off and plug in.
Right.
So, I mean, another thing I want to touch on is as far as the variables go when making boards for people, what amp they're using, what kind of cable they want to use for the sound of it, what kind of guitar they're using. I mean, I can steer a board into a darker, fatter place just by my cable choice.
That's fantastic.
You know, if I'm using a bright twin, I may not want to use a bright cable with no capacitance because it's going to be a little too brittle with a buffer going on. Or I may want to put the buffer like third or fourth down in the chain and kind of balance it a little bit that way.
That's great.
Or using a Les Paul, you may want a brighter cable because Les Pauls are kind of dark. So I take all that in consideration and I kind of balance the board tonally where they want to go with what they use. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, well, let me just wire it up with what you have, I can say, well, that's going to sound bright with all those other pedals in combination. So you may want to put something a little fatter down to balance it.
Yeah.
So that's,
you know. Now, this is kind of to both you, both Tim and David. You use basic, what you call legal pedals. You have those basic, but occasionally you have to use other stuff and pop stuff in there. Are you tending to use newer stuff, or do you need to have the vintage stuff? I mean, how is the new stuff hold up? Is it good?
I like the newer stuff better because I mean, 10 years ago it wasn't this way, but the vintage aesthetic has been brought back into everything that's made now. I mean, every pickup you buy everybody spent the last two decades trying to make them sound like the real thing, and it's no exception with pedals. They're so good now. I like new pedals. I like them because they don't break. They're more full fidelity. They're usually true bypass. They're not as noisy. Dave will disagree with me because he loves vintage pedals.
I do.
And other guitar players would too. I'm a little bit of a heretic in that regard. But the thing that I love about Dave is he's surrounded by all these great guitar players who have all these opinions. And so I'm not as obsessed with this stuff as I used to be. So I can go to him and I can ask him, what's everybody using? And I love that. I love not having to be the first guy to find the greatest thing.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're building a system, will you, you know, if money's no object, will you tell them to get the vintage or will
I'll find them, you know, a vintage Dynacomp or, you know, I'll go and get them an Echoplex and have it tweaked out if they really want the real thing, you know, or I want some vintage wah and I'll say, oh, go get this one. We'll true bypass. It'll sound amazing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the vintage pedals online or on eBay are, you know, they're not that expensive. I mean, some of the old electroharmonics, I can get a small stone phaser for $150 that's mint.
Yeah.
And to be honest, nothing's going to sound that, you know, the parts used in that particular unit. You can make a modern piece, but it's old technology and mm-hmm. it has a sound to
and,
it.
And you said you built a pedal board with your some of your vintage stuff, and you put it all on the same board.
I have a huge electroharmonics collection, and I built one board with all that stuff on it, just to see, because I could.
How it talked to each other.
And just to see how it sounded, because, you know, how often do you get a chance to hear one brand on one board? And it sounded amazing. You know, Memory Man's and Ram's Head Big Muffs. And I'm going to do another one with MXR pedals, because I have a bunch of those as well. So it's just a fun thing to do. But I'm a diehard vintage guy. I have two Echoplexes. You know, Plexis, Twins. I just like that ambient. But I do like modern pedals that do that. Like,
sure.
you know, the Echo Rec by Caitlin Bread.
But in general, the newer pedals, like, I mean, I have on my pedal board, I have a newer MXR. I know it's illegal. I have an MXR Phase 90 on there. But I have an old one. I have an original one that I didn't want to mess with. But it's pretty close. I mean,
it's close, but I mean, if you really get down to it, I mean, I can tell the difference because I'm a purist. You know, I mean, I really hear the difference. But you know, some people, they're not that obsessive about it. It's like, it's a phaser; it does the job. But
any of the new reissues of vintage pedals that stand out to you that are pretty good or that you really like? I mean, is there, you know, some of the Wahs or
There's a Wah made by Matthew McConaughey. I think that's, I'm not sure, it's McConaughey. It's like the best closest I've heard to a vintage Clyde McCoy.
Wow.
There's a fuzz made by Craig Burkos called a Third Stone, which is like,
I've heard of that.
That's like Hendrix incarnate, you know. That's a lot of time spent to get a fuzz to sound like the day, you know. And that's a hard thing to get. I love the new Echo Rec pedal by Caitlin Bread. It can get me my Memory Mans, my Echoplexes, and the Benson stuff. And the preamp in it really sounds good on the dry. That's the one thing that I love about it. Whereas in most digital pedals can mess with the dry sound. But this one really sounds nice. So those are some of my favorites.
That's fantastic. Speaking of kind of the vintage versus the modern, can we talk to him a little bit about that? You mentioned before we started a little about the studio scene changing and how you're operating now. And, you know, I think that would be kind of cool.
How does it change?
Well, like how you're operating now versus, say, a decade ago.
Okay, the beauty of it is I get to work from home a lot of the time. I try and avoid trading files. Like I was telling you before, I usually make sure the client either comes or the client sees me on Skype. I have a couple of film composers who don't want to drive. One of them lives in Beechwood Canyon. The other one lives in Hollywood. I see them on Skype. I don't mind that. I just want to have another person and the energy of another person helping me decide, making sure that I'm getting approval on all my parts and we don't have to do it twice. It's also the inspiration for me. All I need is one other person to show up, and then I have all this, you know, I have all the inspiration I need. Well, of course it's changed. I mean, the budgets are not there anymore, so music gets done any way people can. Generally, they record a drummer by himself, then they start passing the tracks around and finishing the stuff, you know, piecemeal. There's still live sessions. They still happen, but they're more of a rarity.
They're more of a rarity.
But I can answer more specifically if you ask me more
specifically. Well, like specifically, you mentioned like having like your sound pretty much ready. It's like, okay, this is what I'm using.
Yeah.
Instead of spending time to go, okay, let's really dial in this overdrive for an hour.
Okay, here's the benefit of working at home. And the keyboard players and composers I've known have done this all their lives, but I'm finally able to do it. My studio is like starting a Ferrari. I press a button and it's on. It's ready to go. The sounds that I have in that studio have been perfected over years. So I do tweak, but I tweak on my own time.
You're tweaking
so
your free
you
time.
When you show up, you're getting the benefit of a decade of you know, distilling, you know, what this microphone into this mic pre, this pedal. I love this pedal. It's all ready to go. I don't have to rebuild that rig at another studio everywhere I go.
Because, like on your YouTube channel, you see you sitting in this area, and you have all these amp heads around you, and you've got like a computer screen in front of you.
Yeah, it's very tight.
And it's like a little cockpit.
Yeah.
But it's like you look like you've got, it's just everything's there.
Well, that's the idea, is so I can move fast, everything's within reach.
Right.
Because I have to do so many things so fast that if I have to actually get up and plug something in, it's all about momentum. And you lose momentum every time you have to plug in a cable, every time you have to get up and walk.
And you get farther away from the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, you really, really want stuff to happen in the moment really quickly and spontaneously.
Now, let me ask you, when you're using amps in the studio, and this is one of the things that we would do a lot when back in the day when we were in a regular recording studio. If you would say you want to get that, like, real huge, like, Zeppelin-type sound or whatever, Do you have the capability in your studio to do like the three mic setup where you?
No, and I'm basically going to quit because of that. No, I'm just kidding. luckily most of the sounds that we all know and enjoy are close mic'd.
Okay.
But I really wish I had a room sound. I have a vault in my garage. And it's not the greatest environment. I actually have to put a lot of stuff in there to you know, I get a big bass wave that's, like Dave said, oh, this is great bottom end. What that does, it harms the top end. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's talking about because anything that you think is great in one area is really stealing from another area. So my problem with my vault is I get this huge overload of bass. I've solved it mostly by putting all this fiberglass and making a big bass trap in there. So I've opened the top end again, but I can't get room sounds in there, and I would love to. I think I'll be able to find an amazing plug-in and get some good room sounds. I'm going to do that this year.
Because we used to do that a lot. We were lucky on some of the, I mean, commercials or where we're doing like little small quick dates, you just don't have the time. You have to just bang it out. But some of the you know, they were going for, you know, let's experiment with sounds, and we've all had those types of sessions. It was really cool using the three mic thing, and it just gave you. But I mean, you need a room to actually do that kind of stuff.
It's wonderful. I did a session with Eddie Kramer a couple of weeks ago, and he did a lot of that, and it was amazing. It was amazing. It really is. I want it.
No, I agree. I know that there's a lot of the impulse modeling and stuff. They're really good. I mean, they're very impressive. And but I mean I had done one session where we had a rhythm section, piano. I was playing classical guitar, bass, and drums. Very simple thing, but the leakage from the piano of my guitar was so good. They literally left. They just left that on. They didn't need to use the mic. I mean, you could hear more of the finger motion and the nails a little bit. But basically, they didn't need it. It came through. It leaked enough that they ended up. And those are those magic moments that you just. That's one thing I know keyboardists, when they play like a Steinway and it's mic'd in a great room. There's mm-hmm. you know, yeah, you have those samples and they're really cool, but they just don't get that sound.
In the work that I do, you can't use a room sound most of the time because the tracks are already so full. It just you mm-hmm. want the guitar really has to be in your face. So like I said, it's not a big problem for me, but it's something I really wish I had.
Well, plus he's probably trying to match what's mm-hmm. he's already hearing is a room sound, so he can't go completely the other way.
Yeah.
Did you use any of the room sounds on Guitar Land, your solo CD?
I don't think so.
No. It was mainly straightforward?
Yeah, those were ADATs. So.
Oh, geez.
ADATs. Yeah. I remember that. Wow. Yeah.
David, a listener actually contacted me, wanted to know, have you done anything with acoustic instruments in your pedal boards? Anybody come and say, I've got this, I'm an acoustic artist. And
yeah, I've done a board for a violinist.
Okay.
And I've done several acoustic boards for players where we mounted an acoustic preamp on the board.
What kind of preamps have you had any good luck with? Avalons or Pendulum?
Demeter.
Okay, Demeter.
Tube Direct.
Yeah, those are
works
nice.
Works really well for an acoustic. It's really passive. It's got a tube in it. It doesn't get in the way. It doesn't have any weird EQ. LR bags, I've used those on boards. Haven't used any Pendulum stuff, but I done stuff like that. And Colin Hay, I did an acoustic board for Colin Hay.
Oh, very
Hay.
Cool. This guy actually, he's a huge Colin Hay fan. So
yeah, we did a rig for him that goes through Demeter tube direct into a bunch of effects, and then I gave him a box that allows him to switch between his wet feed to the house, his two amps on stage, and then his dry acoustic sounds.
Oh, that's great.
So he can select whatever he wants.
And Tim, you did you do a number of acoustic sessions as well, in addition to the electric stuff.
Yeah, it's a necessary evil for me. I strum pretty well at this point, but yeah, I do my best. So,
Well, as I told you guys, I warned them before the show. It just flies by.
We didn't get to.
But that just means you guys have to come back. And there's
And these guys need to plug their various.
Yeah. Let's just go right down the line. We'll start with David. Your website where people can go.
It's www.lasounddesign.net, and then I have a Facebook, LA Sound Design, and then under YouTube, I have Rack Doctor channel, which we demo every board we do, so you can hear what they sound like and get an idea.
Tim?
Dave is the best, by the way. I send everybody I know to him.
I'll be calling him.
Yeah.
Thank you.
My YouTube channel is kind of my funnest thing in my life, and I just like reaching people all over the world. With it. That's been the most rewarding thing for me is reaching people outside the industry who are just guitar players at whatever level.
Right, and your channel, you basically show your sessions while you're doing
sessions. I show sessions, but I've begun to teach songs, too, and that's really fun, too. Oh, I kind of twist them and make them my own, and sometimes that's good, sometimes...
And what is your YouTube channel URL?
Tim Pierce Guitar.
Tim Pierce Guitar.
It's easy to find, yeah. It's easy.
Tim Pierce. And Ron, again?
MerinoSales.com.
And... Again, those pedals, what are...
We're going to start with the Nobles distribution. We're going to open up some dealers here in the U.S. So those are available to guys. And if anybody's in South County, well, I'm playing Mozambique December 23rd for a CD opening.
Okay. So it'll cool. be... And then real quick, Guitar...
Guitar Exotica and IncendioBand.com, either of those sites.
Okay.
And you can see Incendio at Spaghettini's a few times a year. And San Juan Capistrano Country Club, go to our website.
That's it. Thank you guys all.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
And we'll be here next week. Everybody, have a great week, and we'll see you next week.
See ya. Yeah, we didn't get in.